Unfortunately, there is a song about coffee to begin the show today.
The Ink Spots.
This is actually the Manhattan Transfer.
Oh, it is?
Oh, okay. But the Ink Spots originally did the song.
They did.
But the Manhattan Transfer, are they still around and touring?
Yes, they are, as a matter of fact. In fact, they just released a new CD not long ago.
Oh, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Have not heard of them ever since my smooth jazz days.
No, they're still around.
Quite a few years ago.
Janice Siegel still leading the group. But yeah, they're still in. It's change of personnel over the years, but they are still they're still going strong.
I've always enjoyed them.
I have too. Very versatile.
This is the song Java Jive, because what I was talking about, that I went to get my overpriced coffee this morning, and this time of year I enjoy a nice iced coffee. What's your beverage of choice this time of year, Schwani?
A favorite beverage this time of year?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a
Jack
coffee
Daniels.
Drinker. coffee. I'm a coffee drinker year round. But you know what? In the summertime, I want to go back to my Ute, and I want a 7 Up. I want an Orange Crush, stuff like that. Grape drinks like Radar's Grape
Knee High
Mash. Yeah. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I'm interested in.
I was yesterday.
How about Fresca?
Oh, see, Fresca is very delightful.
Fresca and Tab.
Yeah, but Fresca is so delightfully refreshing, though.
It is.
I'm with Andy 100%. And zero calories.
Correct.
On top of it. But in the morning, I also like a cup. I usually have maybe a cup or two in the morning. That's it. But in the summertime, I enjoy a nice iced coffee. The only problem is when you go to the overpriced coffee store, you know, and you get the plastic cup of the iced coffee, it sweats all over the place. It's a mess. It's a mess. And I said that somebody needs to invent a cup that does not sweat. And our listeners have come to the rescue on this.
Nice. They always do.
Yeah, they do. For the sweaty cup situation, it's fairly easy. Bring your own reusable insulated cup. Many can be purchased fairly cheaply, or if you prefer, the overpriced coffee store also sells overpriced reusable insulated cups, so that is an option. Now, I do have an insulated, I do have the reusable cup, because I don't want to be using plastic cups all the time. So normally, during the week, I use my reusable insulated cup. In fact, during the week, I make my own coffee at home. I make like a nice big pot of it. Good quality coffee. I keep it in the fridge, and then I don't have to go to the overpriced coffee store at all. But I did not bring my cup with me this morning, so I was forced to go to the overpriced coffee store on this. Somebody said put a cardboard sleeve on it like you do with the hot coffee. I guess that would help.
Sure it would. Yeah. It would absorb it.
A little bit. It still is a little bit messy, though. Here's one that says, old bartending tip. Wrap the first plastic cup in a napkin, then put it in a second plastic cup. It won't sweat.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That'll work.
And sounds like very environmentally friendly, too.
Not one, but two plastic cups.
And a napkin.
Make sure you recycle them.
Yeah. Somebody said put a coffee cup do-rag on the cup. Well, that's kind of what the previous person said. Styrofoam cups sweat much less. Guess that makes sense.
Yeah, they actually
everybody's doing away with those.
Yeah, all of these
the lower price coffee shop did away with them.
All these solutions not exactly environmentally friendly, but you know, I get it. I get what you're saying. Don't you carry a cup sleeve? Is that the cardboard thing
like
that
the koozie or like little you know, like you put like a can of
like
pop
a can
or
of
a
beer?
Beer.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I guess that would work. I do have some of those. Dean, get a Tervia tumbler. I guess that's like the a thermos kind of thing, right?
Like their Tervis. I think that's the name.
Tervis, is that what they're called? Okay. A lot of people suggesting the styrofoam. All right. So
I think that might be your best bet.
I should just remember to bring my reusable cup that I have.
That would work, too.
I've got mine. My Yeti is right here with me.
Excuse me.
It's code for those who know what a Yeti is.
I've seen Fiddler on the Roof, but I don't remember a Yeti.
That might have been Yentl.
Maybe that was Yentl I was thinking of. It's entirely possible. So on the show today, we've got the cast of a new show that's coming to the that's actually at the Black Ensemble Theater right now. Shawnee, you're gonna love this because it brings back all the songs of the 60s and 70s from the great R&B and soul groups of the 60s and 70s.
I'm ready.
And they're gonna perform for us in studio today.
You think they'd let me join in?
I would pay you $100 if you would.
No, you may take it back very quickly.
I would do anything to make you one of the pips. You know that.
Oh, the visual.
Shawnee on the midnight train to Georgia.
Midnight Woo-hoo! Train to Georgia.
Woo-hoo! He's leaving. Leave it.
That's going to be coming up later on this morning. We're off early. What time is White Sox pregame today?
12:35.
12:35, correct. 12:35,
okay.
Special ceremony here at the ballpark today for Harold Baines.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. What are they going to do exactly?
Basically, we're going to present him with some gifts, of course, and there's going to be some of his former teammates. His first manager will be here, and be some speeches and some video tributes, and we'll carry most of it. I mean, the video tributes don't really relate very well to radio, but we'll make sure we bring you all the speeches that do occur
today. Yeah, that'll be nice. What would you say would be the highlights of his career?
Well, the highlights, I mean, he was amazing.
He's a remarkable player, right?
Yeah, he was amazing for the White Sox, and you know, he was kind of moved around a little bit, and it's interesting that when he was still playing, Jerry Reinsdorf decided to retire his number, and also they made the statue. There's a statue out there of him in the concourse in the outfield. And, you know, he was very well known for not really speaking, but letting his bat do the talking for him. And many were wondering how short or long his speech would be at Cooperstown. People thought maybe he'd get up there and say thank you and then sit down. But he did a very nice speech there, and he'll be called upon again today, so we'll see how long that one lasts.
What time will the ceremonies be taking place? Before the game, obviously, right?
Yeah, I believe that they're going to start at 12:40-ish, 12:45. Oh, okay. So if you're coming to the game today, make sure you're here early. And I think they're suggesting you be in your seats by about 12:15,
wow,
just to make sure.
Okay. And the pregame will start at 12:35, so you'll...
Correct.
You will hear or get a description of what's going on for the big tribute that will take place today. So that'll be a lot of fun. Good deal. All right, let's take a break. We've got a lot of things to get to between now and 12:35 today. It's Dean Richards, Sunday morning. It's too late, but I won't be that way. Enjoyed them last night at the United Center. I was not in attendance at the show, but I am told that it was a blast. A near capacity crowd at the UC as the boys, now 26 years together, by the way. Doesn't that seem funny? I still think of the Backstreet Boys as, you know, the, I guess they were teenagers when they started because they're not that old yet now. But they've been performing for 26 years. They brought their DNA World Tour to the United Center. Nick Carter, Kevin Richardson, Brian Luttrell, Howie D, who was at the WGN TV morning news yesterday. I ran into him in the hallway, and he couldn't have been a nicer guy. Al McLean, all performing in perfect unison yesterday. This is not one of these, you know, if you want to call them a nostalgia group, they have new albums, new songs out right now. I don't really consider them that, but they haven't missed a step. They're still sharp and entertaining and fun, and their songs are very memorable. They did just about every song, I am told, from their new album, in addition to songs like this, I Want It That Way, and I Gotta Be You, and Quit Playing Games With My Heart, Show Me the Meaning of Being Lonely. These are all huge hit songs. Shape of My Heart, they did quite a night, and fans, I am told, were very delighted by the whole show at the United Center last night. If you are looking for concert going tonight, I would call and or go online and check and see if tickets are still available, because I know that even lawn seats for last night were not available. It was completely sold out at Ravinia for the group Chicago. Our pals have come back home, and they're doing two nights at Ravinia. So if you're a fan of the group Chicago and their many, 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 many hits, they're up at Ravinia for tonight. Now, everyone's favorite part of the show, what's going on at Guaranteed Rate Field at 9:34 in the morning when Andy's out there pretty much by himself, but occasionally we find some very interesting things that are going on out there. Paint your picture magic.
Okay, I've turned on the crowd mic too, so let's see if that hopefully picks up something. There is a gentleman right now who is painting, and I do mean painting, the white line for fair foul up the first baseline.
Oh,
right now.
That is exciting.
He is hunched over at the waist now, paintbrush in contact with the dirt.
Yeah.
Moving from left to right on your radio dial, and looking like he's painting within the lines, which is always good, because you don't want a crooked foul line, because that would be really bad.
That would not be good.
Involved.
Would it be one continuous stroke to the left, or is he like a back and forth and back and forth and back and forth kind of a stroke?
His technique is back and forth, back and forth, making sure he's covered all of his quote-unquote bases here.
Is there painter's tape along the strip there?
the blue tape
is very
extremely long, like that. No,
they don't have that.
No, they don't. These guys are trained professionals.
These are professionals, right?
Yeah, this is what they
do. Well, a professional painter uses the tape, too.
Yeah, these guys are, they like to show up, everybody, because this is a baseball field. They have to hone their craft, and, not anybody gets to go out there and paint the foul line.
Yeah. You're listening to exclusive coverage of the foul line being painted on Guaranteed Rate Field.
Now you sound like a golf announcer.
Now,
reporter
also,
Andy Mazur with the exclusive details.
Activity in center field where the grounds crew keeps most of their equipment beyond the center field wall. There is a tractor now dragging the warning track out in center field, now moving toward right center field, moving at a pace of about 6 to 7 miles an hour.
Wow.
It's
quite
a bright red tractor, yes, with three wheels. Actually, it's a three-wheel tractor.
Wow, three-wheeler.
Yes, metal grate is what they're using to drag the warning track area. Now, in the stands themselves, there is power washing going on to make sure that when you come to the ballpark today, your seat is in pristine, clean condition.
You can eat off those seats when you get there today.
Yes, if not eating off of them, maybe eating in them, that's fine too. But you will be happy to know that your seat will be clean and waiting and ready for you once you come to the ballpark today.
Once again, you're listening to exclusive coverage of what goes on in Guaranteed Rate Field before the park is open.
Yeah, and there were two members of the Oakland A's coaching staff were leisurely walking around the innards of the ballpark here, right along the lines and the foul lines. And there are also people that are down the right field line right now hanging up the bunting, because today, of course, is a special day here at the ballpark with Harold Baines Day.
Yeah. Oh, that's very, very interesting.
Yes. So you got a lot to look forward to when you come out here today.
Yeah. Take that, all other radio stations.
Yeah.
Nobody else has this except us.
Can you give us an idea of where Mr. Baines will be standing during the ceremonies today?
Yeah. Now, normally, if it holds true like it normally does, Mr. Baines will be located somewhere just in front of the pitching mound and the circle area right there in the grass. And the dignitaries will be lined up in usually white folding chairs to the left of that circle near the third baseline. And there'll be a podium set up, of course, for Mr. Baines to come to and talk, and a couple of other people will be chatting as well.
Now, this mound is where the pitcher stands
to throw the ball.
That's why they call it a pitcher's mound.
To the batter, in order for the batter to attempt to hit the ball. Is that correct?
And it would be 60 feet 6 inches from the little platter that they call the plate, which is where the batter stands.
We have a lot of people from other countries who have never heard of baseball before, and that's why we try to explain things as much as possible.
Yes.
Some may think that we're over-explaining it, but we are.
We want to help the visitors.
You can't.
This
can't
show
over-explain
is all about helping, caring, and love to others.
Now, we might get a treat here if we wait just a second, because there are four microphones set up in the area of where they would do the Star-Spangled Banner, the national anthem.
Test the mics.
And there are a few folks that have now come from the center, from the home plate gate.
Oh, this is exciting now.
But they are not approaching the microphones as of yet.
This is not so exciting then.
They are taking photographs, selfies, if you will, from right behind home plate and the Sox insignia in chalk in the grass.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, are these electrocardioid dynamic microphones? are they condenser microphones?
They're whatever microphones you want to imagine them to be.
For the first time ever on the show, radio engineers have become interested in what we're talking about.
And the stands do have that little arm that will bend up and down and will get close to the mouth so you can actually hear what the person is saying and or singing.
I cannot imagine any more minute, somewhat might say boring detail of what's going on out there.
What do the windscreens look like?
All right, Shawnee, back to you.
Our far-flung forecast takes us not all that far from home today. Oconomowoc, Wisconsin.
Oh, I love Oconomowoc.
Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, which is in Waukesha County, Wisconsin, the United States of America. Population 15,712.
When's the last time you were up that way?
It's been a couple of years because we drove up through Wisconsin and back through Wisconsin when we were doing our national parks series. So that's been a couple of years now. Yeah. So we're not all that far from Oconomowoc.
I used to go up there quite a bit, but I have not been up that way in a while. I always enjoy anytime I take a little road trip up to Wisconsin.
Very nice area up there. The word Oconomowoc comes from a Potawatomi term for waterfall.
Really?
Yes.
So waterfall is, if I was going to speak in Native American, would be Oconomowoc?
You're close. Kunomowoc. But it just became Oconomowoc.
Okay.
Yeah, Kunomowoc. Right. But we mention Oconomowoc, Wisconsin today because 90 years ago tomorrow, a movie that has become an American institution premiered in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. I will play this song, and I need say no more.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
Now, I've never heard that song before, so.
That's not Caddyshack, right?
What's that?
It wasn't Caddyshack.
Porky's? Is it from Porky's too?
Electric Boogaloo.
The Wizard of Oz had its premiere 90 years ago tomorrow.
Why in Oconomowoc?
They showed it in Oconomowoc and a couple other places. I guess the old saying, will it play in Peoria? They wanted to see how it would work out in various smaller
outside
towns.
Outside the major metropolitan areas.
Yeah, I tried to look up a reason for that, and I really couldn't find, an absolute reason why, as if it, it was part of the story, which it is not, because Dorothy and family are in Kansas in The Wizard of Oz.
That would have made sense to have done the premiere in Kansas.
Just like Gone with the Wind was premiered in
Atlanta.
Yeah. But Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, and they take a great deal of pride in, rightly so, in Oconomowoc.
That's very nice.
The Wizard of Oz was premiered 90 years ago tomorrow.
Oh, we're off to see the Wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Again, I've never heard that song.
You've never heard the song
before.
Not
familiar with that.
Okay.
Can you imagine this, though?
And here you are, movie critic extraordinaire. You've never heard this.
1929.
39. Did I say 90? I should have said 80 years. I'm sorry. 80 years.
80 years ago.
And that's why I'm in radio and not a mathematician.
So 1939, my point still is this. 1939. You imagine you go to the kind of movies that were out back then, all black and white for the most part, and all kind of straightaway dramas or screwball comedies. Here comes this. It had to be the most imaginative, far out thing that people had seen at that time. Imagine that with, I mean, just, you know, the quote special effects in that movie for 1939.
Amazing.
Must have been mind-blowing to people
to, had to
see been. All that. To see a movie go from black and white to color must have been a huge big deal. But to see some of the effects of the tornado and the witch.
Right.
And melting and, you know, all that.
And very vivid color. I mean, even to this day, you watch it. They don't call it Technicolor for nothing. I mean, it's so vivid and stands out. It's just beautiful.
Yeah. Now I want to watch The Wizard of Oz. I want to get a VHS copy of it, go up to Oconomowoc and watch it.
Well, they will welcome you. Well, and let's, since we're doing a forecast for Oconomowoc, a cloudy day and 70 there today.
Beautiful, beautiful day to watch a movie.
Go inside and just watch The Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. Wizard of Oz was, somebody says, was not the first Technicolor movie. There had been movies in color dating back to the early 1900s. But I think that this was one of the first mainstream films.
One of the first mainstream
films. That's why I said for the most part, all movies were in black and white. Because they didn't, it didn't become more commonplace, and certainly not big major motion picture releases like this one, really, until The Wizard of Oz. Certainly there were experiments in color films before that.
Even some of the silent, like they say, the early 1900s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like watching those old films. I enjoy, if I occasionally see them on television, but occasionally theaters, you know, will have little festivals of movies from the 20s and 30s.
Yep.
And it's fascinating to see some of these movies. I got hooked into a movie yesterday, a black and white movie yesterday. I think it was on TMC channel. I was just flipping around, and I saw Red Skelton, the comedian Red Skelton, in a fairly dramatic role. It was called The Clown. The movie was called The Clown. I'd never seen it before, but he was about a former comedian, comic, like vaudeville star, who had a drinking problem, down on his luck, had a little kid, was married, the wife divorces him, he has a little kid. It's a heartbreaking story, but I got hooked into it just because of these old movies are so stylish, and you know there's just a certain charm that movies today movies don't have.
Yeah, it's the clothing, it's the lighting, it's the staging, it's everything.
And Red Skelton.
Yeah, not to mention
the talented guy he was.
Yeah, you know those silent spot bits that he would do. That was all improv on live network television.
Well, I mean, he had a very famous, you know, for you know anybody, I don't know, under 60 years old, who may not remember 50s. Or
who's
60s.
Red Skelton?
Or like what's a red skeleton?
what's a red skeleton?
They think it's a skeleton that is color red.
He was
a very, very famous actor and comedian in radio, in the golden days of radio, then on in the movies and on television. Had a very, very popular variety show and a master of pantomime.
Yep.
King of pantomime.
That's right.
Which was partially demonstrated in this film that I saw yesterday, the comic. He a very talented guy, and it was very interesting to see this movie. I love those old movies.
Love them. So do I.
Not that I didn't enjoy Dora and the Lost City of Gold also, you know, that's out this week. I say very sarcastically. I can't even believe that I was able to compose myself enough to even come in to do the show today following the very sad news of the breakup of Miley Cyrus and her husband, Liam Hemsworth. Not Thor from the Avengers movie, that's his brother Chris Hemsworth, but Liam Hemsworth is the one that has had an on and off relationship with Miley Cyrus for the past 10 years. They dated each other back in, they were previously engaged to each other in 2012 and then called off their engagement. They dated before that. They rekindled their romance in 2015 And then last December, secretly tied the knot, got married. And, you know, and it seemed like they had gotten things together again. But last night, a representative for Miley Cyrus issued this statement that Liam and Miley have agreed to separate, ever-evolving, changing as partners and individuals. They've decided that this is what's best as they focus on themselves and their careers. They remain dedicated parents to their animals that they share. While lovingly taking this time apart, please respect their process and their privacy. So, you know, you've got to be a little bit sad when you hear that anybody's going through a breakup. That's not an easy thing for anybody to deal with, especially when you live in the public spotlight. I don't know anything about the inside workings of their relationships, but you know, relationships can be challenging. And when you are as public people as they are, it's got to put even a little more pressure on the whole thing. Here's something interesting, though. So Miley Cyrus's representative issues that very lovely statement about respect their process and their privacy. And then Miley Cyrus, not wearing wedding ring, jets off to Italy and joined her friend Caitlin Carter from the TV show The Hills, who recently split from her husband, Brody Jenner. And they are seen, the two of them, seen being very intimate and kind of romantic with each other. So, showbiz, what are you going to do? I say Shawnee is going to love our next guest. They are many of the cast members.
They were all just shaking their heads.
Everybody does. At this theater open, this is how I know if you're the real deal in theater. If you go nuts when you hear this theme song, everybody starts dancing in their chair to this. If you are a true theater person, and they are. They are the cast members from the new show at Black Ensemble Theater. You Can't Fake the Funk, A Journey Through Funk Music. Daryl D. Brooks is the writer, director, the producing managing director. Daryl, Shawnee, I don't know if you know, did George Clinton's hair Parliament Funkadelic for many years.
Well, let's just say I'm happy he's on the radio now.
And not in this room. Now, Shawnee is a lover of all kinds of music, but really when it comes to like 60s, 70s, R&B, funk, I mean, he loves all kinds of music, jazz, everything. But Shawnee, this show, this one's for you. This show is for you.
I'm ready. Yeah. I told you, I'm ready.
So also, let me introduce some of the cast members who are in studio with us. And let me start with Stuart Romeo, who, when I said that they tied my left hand behind me in third grade, you almost jumped out of your chair because that happened to you also. That's crazy that also happened to you.
Yeah, man, I was at Creative Mansions, and that teacher, she would sit on my hand, and she would make me write with my hand.
Wow.
Craziest thing I ever did.
See, I would have thought that they would have gotten rid of those like crazy techniques by the time you came along. You're much younger than I am.
I know.
But I guess tried and true, did it work?
No.
Yeah, you're still left hand.
Okay, handwriting is also terrible.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's the way it is. I guess that's how we're going to be. David Simmons. Also on the show, left or right-handed, because I think from now on we're only going to have left-handed people on the show.
Okay, should I leave now?
You actually should leave right now. You should leave right now. Nice to have you with us.
Good to be here.
As well. And poor Jayla Williams-Craig in the middle of all this madness here this morning. It's lovely to have you here with us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Daryl, tell us about the show. Black Ensemble Theater, famous for these wonderful shows that go back and recreate these incredibly magic times of periods of music.
Yeah, absolutely. This is no different, except for I designed this just to be a big party. So, Dean, when you come into the show, the first thing that happens is you get a boarding pass to get on the mothership. So you board the mothership, and then the person that takes us through the journey, his name is Dr. Funk. And so Dr. Funk takes us through the journey through some of the lives of some of the greatest funk artists In the world.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened. It's just a big, big party. And you know, the set looks like a, you know, an old mothership and everything else. The lights are wonderful. It's just a great review. It's just
this
a lot
gonna
of fun.
Take me back to the day?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it kinda works chronologically. I wrote it that way. So we go James Brown all the way through to, you know, Parliament Funkadelic, but you know, in between there we have Ohio Players, Sly and the Family Stone, the Commodores. Who'd you say?
Chaka Khan.
Yeah, you know, Chicago's own.
Can't
you know,
forget Chicago.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. So we just go through the gambit, and you know, it's just a lot of fun, high energy, just a good time. So yeah. Good time.
What's the challenge of writing a show like this? Because I mean, you could put a show together with just songs and make it a musical review, but you have to, as the writer and the director, you have to thread kind of a storyline through this whole thing.
Absolutely. But with this show, what I found, and I'm sure some of your listeners might disagree. Every time I do a radio show, with this one, what I found was, you know, funk music is huge. People sample it today. People use the rhythm of the one today. What I found was trying to pick which songs were going to be in this show.
Yeah.
And so I had to narrow it down to the funk artists that had the most hits. So if you weren't just an R&B group that had a funk hit, I didn't necessarily put you in. Like, you had to really, really fit into the genre
some
of
credentials.
Into funk music. And it's really not a lot. A lot of people think that there's a lot, or there was a lot of like funk groups that were really, really powerful on the scene. But we're looking at maybe 10 or 15 that were just, you know, just had hit after hit after hit. Yeah.
The powerhouses.
Exactly, yeah.
So you take the songs first, and then you string a story through it?
The story through it.
Is that how you do it?
Yeah, that's kind of how I have an idea of like what I want the basis to be.
Hmm.
And then I go and start researching the songs and the different artists in the genre. And then I pick. I actually don't pick until I actually cast the show. I mean, I think that's what I do that might be a little different. Like, I'll cast the show and say, this person sounds like this, or this person can do this, and this can happen. Then I really go in and research everything I can that would be different about the artist
that
or about the group.
Yeah. So how did you pick these three then, based on their strengths, obviously, but... So what was the process that you went through?
They just sound and act like the people I needed them to. that's just the truth. It was one of those times. I remember going in with Stuart, and Stuart also works in our shop, helps build the sets in the Black Ensemble, and I was just like, hey, you're gonna be Sly in the Family Stone. He was like, what do you mean? I said, you sound like Sly, so there you go. You're gonna be Sly, and sure enough, here we are.
Great. Were you building a set when he said that to you?
I actually was. Except for Lena and Nancy.
And same thing, you know, with everybody else, and David and his bass voice. It was just trying to figure out where to put him.
So yeah, what are you talking about, Daryl?
So okay, so we have Sly, and then David. Which performers do you do?
I am Isaac Hayes.
Oh, of course, of course. Yeah,
hence the bass voice. And I sing with the Commodores.
Okay. So you're part of the ensemble with that.
I am.
And Jayla, you do Chaka Khan, I assume.
No, actually do Rolls Royce. So we do a little car wash.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then I also do some Mary Jane Girls.
Nice.
Yes, that's really
How fun is it for all of you? None of you look old enough to have actually lived during this time, but I imagine music that you all grew up with, probably heard in your homes, I'll bet, growing up, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So one of the things that was really dope, at least about this show, was that for all the songs in the song list, I knew all of them before we even got cast in the show. Like, and most of the song lists I had word for word. So when we were in rehearsal, I'm just having fun. I'm not even stressing or worrying or trying to pick up the words. This has been music that, I don't know, it's always been really important to me, and I've always loved it. It's been like that driving force to really push me, and a lot of times that support system that I've always needed.
Just so, part of your DNA, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of songs that you grew up with. Same with both of you as well?
Absolutely. I've been with theaters, been with the Black Ensemble since I was 14.
Really?
Yeah, it's going on 32 years for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to be amazing for you.
Oh my God,
just to have seen the evolution of Black Ensemble
Theater. Absolutely.
And how it, I mean, I remember when I would start to go to shows there, and it was in the small theater. I think it's moved a couple of times.
It has. Oh, yeah,
since
it has.
Then. And you know, now to be one of the most formidable theater companies in Chicago, it's you've really seen some changes.
I have. Jackie Taylor is definitely a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. How about for you, Kayla?
For me, it's just been, I knew most of the songs. Some songs I actually didn't know, but I didn't know like who sang who, and then I found out who it was, and it was just so easy to connect to them and to get to groove to them.
Yeah.
It's just so fun. It's just easy to learn your part, easy to dance to it, yeah. And just fun.
Is it fun to sing that music as opposed to other kinds of music?
Oh, yes.
Which I presume you also must do other kinds of
100%.
Music. 100%. Yeah? Mm. Why is that?
It's just fun. It's just, I don't know, it's just... You connect to it. I'm a music lover, and this music is like maybe top five of the genres, I think, of you, like of everyone. Yeah. Everyone likes this genre.
You know, to me, it's just timeless music.
Yeah.
I mean, these are, as you were saying, Daryl, I mean, there's a small number of groups and an even smaller number of actual songs,
right.
Which will stand the test of time.
Absolutely.
Whoever's sitting in the studio in 100 years, and I have no doubt that WGN will still be in the same room in 100 years.
Right on.
Will also, you know, are still going to be talking about these same songs and these same groups because they are timeless. They are among the greatest songs that have ever been recorded, written and recorded. Mm.
Absolutely. Yeah. And another big part about funk music that a lot of people don't know is that, you know, for blacks, African Americans, it had to happen. It was formative in the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. Instead of Motown, which, you know, helped create funk music, you know, we really wanted to stand out. Like, mm-hmm. And we really needed to make make a noise, a big noise, a big buzz, not only in the civil rights movement, you know, protesting and doing everything we need to do, but musically, you really see, hey, this is who we are. We're black and we're proud. And, mm-hmm. you know, everything else is just there and it's out front and in your face. And like you said, it withstands the test of time.
Yeah. The show is called You Can't Fake the Funk, A Journey Through Funk Music. It's playing through September 22nd. We'll tell you how to get tickets in a minute. Tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, talking with Sherry Shepherd. She'll be in studio with us, talking about her new movie and other projects that she's working on, and Oscar winner Cate Blanchett, all on my A-list interviews tomorrow on Chicago's number one, the WGN-TV Morning News. It's 10:54, and we have some of the cast with us this morning from the new show at Black Ensemble Theater, You Can't Fake the Funk, A Journey Through Funk Music. Playing through September the 22nd, Daryl D. Brooks, the writer, director, producing, managing director, is here with us, along with Jayla Williams, Craig, Stuart Romeo, and David Simmons. And I think you're actually going to do this song for us to start things off. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does Sly and the Family Stone mean to you all?
Sly and the Family Stone is one of the first people that I saw as a visionary when it came to seeing something and creating a revolutionary sound out of nothing.
Yeah.
Like Sly Stone, even when it came to like recording different versions of songs, he had this method of recording where he ended up breaking the actual version of the original recording device, but he created this sound that nobody was able to recreate. It was just that mind of a creative and that energy that came with his performance. It's always electric. Every time you see him perform, you know he's giving 100% of himself.
Yeah.
They say that James created the funk and Sly styled it.
Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah. That's a great description of it all.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say effortless perfection.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the fact that he always had a message in his radio show and knew how to convey it to the people without going, without actually going against what the station itself had. So he kept within his guidelines, but still was able to convey his message to the people in the way, on his own special way. So
again, timeless music.
Absolutely.
Music that stands the test of time. Dance to the Music is up first. You guys, take it away.
Dance to the music. Dance to the music. Dance to the music.
Hey,
all we need Talk to him, Larry.
I'm gonna add some bottom so that the dancers they just won't hide.
You start a Sunday morning right there. Tear the roof off this WGN here this morning. Wow, that is amazing. That was great, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For that. For the show that will run through September the 22nd, you can get tickets at blackensemble.org or 773-769-4451. Blackensemble.org or 773-769-4451. Will you tell Jackie that I said hello?
Absolutely.
One of my longtime friends. Love her. And you guys sounded fantastic. Stuart Romeo, David Simmons, Jayla Williams, Craig, and director Daryl D. Brooks. Thank you for bringing all this to us. We appreciate it.
Right on.
Some good stuff. Which one was your favorite Backstreet Boy? Ringo?
Yeah, we'll just go with Ringo. They're a fine group.
Nick Carter, Kevin Richardson, Brian Luttrell, Howie D, Al McClain.
I like them all.
You like them all?
I like them all.
The Backstreet Boys. You know they've been performing for 26 years together? It's a long time.
That is a long time.
It's a long time. They had their DNA World Tour was at the United Center last night. This is one of the songs that they performed, along with lots of their other hits. I Want It That Way, Backstreet's Back, It's Gotta Be You, Shape of My Heart, Show Me the Meaning of Being Lonely, some of their great hits. And they have a new album out. I mean, they're as popular today as ever, and they have a brand new album out. They did many of those songs, and the feedback that we're getting, everybody had a great time at the show last night. This may be a show, Schwani, that you would enjoy tonight at Ravinia. You like the group Chicago, don't you?
Oh, love Chicago. I've got their original Chicago Transit Authority album at home.
On vinyl?
On vinyl.
Me too? Same.
Yep. Yes, absolutely.
Back when they were called, before they were called
Chicago
the group
Transit
Chicago,
Authority.
What was their name before they were Chicago Transit Authority?
The Big Thing.
The Big Thing, right.
The Big Thing.
They were called the Big Thing.
Or the Big Ting, depending on where you
well,
were.
Many of them were from the South Side. The Big Ting there.
Yep.
And then they
like
changed.
Shopping at DeJules.
They changed it to Chicago Transit Authority. Turns out the actual Chicago Transit Authority was not so crazy.
They weren't happy with that.
using their name. So they simply shortened it. And they just named the group after the city.
Yep.
And they've been They're Rock and Roll Hall of Famers now. They've got all kinds of Grammy Awards. Couldn't be a nicer group of guys on top of it. I've known them for years. And they were at Ravinia last night. They are at Ravinia again tonight. Did I see them last year? I think I did see them in concert last year. I haven't seen them so far this year. But it is so much fun to go to a Chicago concert.
A friend of mine saw them together with Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh,
how about that?
I saw that.
That was great.
The show that I saw last year.
That would be great.
With Earth, Wind, and Fire, and both groups are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they perform their, you know, one of them starts the show, and then they kind of do a mashup, both of the groups together. Imagine all those horns together. Quite amazing. And then, you know, they finish, and then they come back for an encore afterwards. It's really fun.
Yeah, and you think about this. Chicago has been together, you know, still the original members are...
50 years.
50 years. Robert Lamb, Jim Pankow, yeah. Walt Perezader. Yeah.
I've known this group long enough. When there was a Chicago Fest... Before Taste of
Chicago. Right, in the early 80s at Navy Pier.
When there was a Chicago Fest at Navy Pier, the group Chicago did a concert there, and I hosted it. We broadcast it live on Fire Radio, WFYR, and I hosted it, and I introduced them on stage, and, you know, it was a big deal. So I've known these guys pretty much since then, pretty long time. And back then, Robert Lamb, you could call him Bobby Lamb. And when I saw him a couple of years ago, I called him Bobby. And he goes, Dean.
It's Robert.
It's like I'm not a kid like we first met anymore. It's like, I'm sorry. If you see him around, make sure you
and
call
he was
him
not a, smiling when he said
he,
that,
no, right? He meant business. I mean, he was nice enough.
It's Robert.
But he was nice enough, but he did not want me to call him Bobby anymore.
Well, you know, I've always seen him listed on the albums and the CDs as Robert Lamb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he made it very clear to me that he liked that's what he preferred.
That's what he preferred.
So, Robert it is. Anyway, they're fantastic. He sounds great. The rest of the band sounds great. They're just, you know, charging along at full steam. They're all great. So Ravinia tonight. I don't even know if tickets are available for the show or not. I know yesterday's show that they did sold out. I don't know if tonight's is or not. So here's another big story that's going on in the movie world. There was going to be a movie that was going to be opening at the end of September called The Hunt, and it's an R-rated satire. But it is a movie in which rich people hunt poor people for sport. I haven't seen it. I only know it by description from what I've read, because they've never screened it for the critics or for anybody. It's still pretty far off. But yesterday, Universal Pictures issued a statement saying that they've decided to cancel their plans to release this film. Say that we stand by the filmmakers. We will continue to distribute their films in partnership with the bold and visionary creators like those associated with this satirical social thriller. But we just don't think that the time is right to release this film, given the shootings last Sunday, a week ago, in El Paso and in Dayton, Ohio. So Universal has decided to pull this film. I don't know. I mean, these kinds of movies are, you know, goes along with the whole kind of horror genre of films that are out there right now. This one happens to be very specifically about the use of rifles and guns and, you know, everything that's being debated right now in the country. It's very specifically about that. But so the movie studio has decided not to put this movie out. But is it any worse, really, than movies that are, you know, where you see somebody get completely disemboweled and you see some of the other horrific things under the guise of horror films that are going to be put out? It's a movie specifically about killing people and done apparently in a very R-rated and satiric way. So anyway, you're not going to be seeing this film, at least not for the foreseeable future. But I guess yesterday, President Trump he didn't specifically talk about, he didn't say the title of this film, but he did talk about Hollywood. This is from the president's tweet. Liberal Hollywood is racist at its highest level, and with great anger and hate, they like to call themselves elite, but they are not elite. In fact, it's often the people that they so strongly oppose that are actually the elite. The movie coming out, referring to this film apparently, is made in order to inflame and cause chaos. They create their own violence, and then they try to blame others. They are true racists. They're very bad for our country. So, you know, that was the president's statement about this whole thing. But guess what? You know, I know Hollywood pretty well, and I know the ins and outs of this. Happens to be an area where I do know something about. And the only thing that Hollywood cares about is your money. I promise you that. It's very popular, and people jump onto this bandwagon, you know, that Holly Weird, as a lot of people like to call them. The liberals out in Holly Weird have a conspiracy, and they have an agenda. Their agenda is to take money out of your pocket and put it in their pocket. That's all they care about.
Can I ask a question on this movie?
Yeah.
Because when I saw the story about this yesterday and how all of this was taking place and coming to a head as it has, who was behind this movie? Who wrote the screenplay? Who concocted this story?
Directed by Craig Zobel. Written by Damon Lindelof and Nick Cuss. Hilary Swank stars in it. Betty Gilpin from GLOW are on opposite sides of the political divide. You know, one side, I think the Betty Gilpin character, from what I've seen of the trailer of it, and they've even pulled... Universal Pictures has pulled the trailer off of online places, but it's been so distributed so far, it's still very easy to find if you want to try to find it online. What it looks like to me is that Betty Gilpin represents the rich people, the rich, people who are so bored with their lives because they have everything that they decide that they're going to go hunt poor people. And Hilary Swank represents the poor people of this battle going on. And from what I can tell by looking at the trailer and from what I've read, you know, it's all done very satirically, but it looks to be an extremely violent movie.
From and what I saw on TV yesterday, it looks very violent.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Very much so. But here's the thing, you know, everyone, you know, is, you know, pounding their chests like, oh, this is, you know, violent movies are causing the violence that we have in this country. Guess why there are so many violent movies? Because people are going to them. People are paying their money in record amounts to go. The more violent, the better. People like movies like this. So to me, it's kind of a catch-22. I promise you, Hollywood would not be delivering anything did not put money in their pocket. That is the one single thing that they care about. Couldn't care less about social agendas. I mean, maybe in their personal lives they do, but for the product that they're putting out there, all they care about is getting your money.
A return on the investment.
Return on the investment. And if you know, these the Saw movies, the Night of the Living Dead, you know, name the extremely violent, bloody movie franchise. There are many of them. If they weren't making tons of money on these movies, they would not be making these movies. It's all about the money. And anyone who thinks that it's anything but that is kidding themselves. That's what it is. People love it. They love to see someone's head get chopped off. They love to see someone, you know, take an axe in the skull. To, you know, the more repulsively violent acts in the movie, the more I've sat in movie theaters screening these movies and, you know, to review them and hearing people cheering when the most bloody, gory, disgusting things happen. People like them. So, who said that? Marshall Field, give the lady what she wants. I mean, that's what this boils.
That's what they're doing.
That's what this boils down to right now. I don't disagree when somebody says that violent movies may cause people to act out their violence. I don't know how some people can't be affected by violent movies, violent television shows. Television shows these days, especially on the online platforms, there's nothing holding back anything. On commercial television, there are limits. But video games, I don't know how that doesn't have an effect on, if an 8-year-old is watching an extremely violent, blood-filled movie where, one scene after the other is more violent than the next, I don't know how that doesn't have an effect on a little kid. I don't know if that's, I'm not a psychologist, I don't know if that has a long-term effect and causes the kind of violence that we see in our world. I mean, it's clear that something's going on in the world where people, there is no such thing as conflict resolution. If people have disagreements, that you can't discuss your disagreements, and that people have to act out in a violent way. Is it caused by movies? Maybe. It seems like, there are probably lots of other reasons that these things happen as well. But I just find it a little bit hypocritical to, this movie, the movie studio has decided that it's not a good time to release this movie. Are they acting as responsible citizens and deciding this is not a good time to put this movie out because we are responsible citizens? Or are they motivated by money? Again, it's back to the money. This would be, we would not make as much money as we hoped we would make if we put this movie out right now. I think the latter. I think that's what it is. But all these people are complaining about violent movies are what's causing people to go into Walmarts and shoot the place up, and going into schools and shoot the place up. Yeah, these are the same people that are going to see these violent movies because they love them. So there's a certain amount of hypocrisy that goes on with this whole thing. Emus, hi, you're on WGN.
Hi, Dean, how are you?
Thank you for calling. How are you today? I'm fine.
Thanks for having me. I am so glad you're talking about this. I'm the CEO of Guardian Angel Community Services.
Yeah.
We're in Joliet, so shout out to you. I know you know Ralph Sherman, so
oh,
I'm
sure
you'd be sending
one of the best guys there is.
Yeah, and we serve thousands of victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. We work with perpetrators. We've been around for 120 years during the Chicagoland area. And I've recently been appointed to the Governor's Council on Women and Girls and the Gender-Based Violence Committee. And our staff, everyone does a phenomenal job constantly talking about this topic, and we train people. And it is a myriad of issues, I think. But one of the main factors, and they've started to talk a little bit about this, has to do with how, like you said, why is this? We have movies and video games, and one person might be violent, the other may not. But the one common denominator in all these areas is gender and how we culturalize men and boys in our society to be violent. Girls have mental illness. They're exposed to video games. They're exposed to these movies. And the one main factor that remains unexamined is that. And outmoded ideals of manhood and all of these things, the images that we show, it's reiterating all of that. So even though, yes, we make these movies and people go and see them, well, we go and see them because we've created a culture in which that's socially acceptable. And I'll tell you, Dr. Jackson Katz, I don't know if you've heard of him, but anyone interested in this topic, he's been a pioneer on it for 20, 30 years. It's fascinating, disturbing also, but there's things we should be doing to change how we view those gender roles.
Yeah, well, very definitely, very definitely. What do you think of the idea that I was talking about, that, some people are saying that violent movies, Hollyweird, as people on the right like to call it, are the reason that there's so much gun violence. Yet it's these kind of movies that are the biggest box office sellers. People love these movies and go to see them.
Right. Well, and when we create a culture in which that's accepted and it's a form of entertainment, we don't stop and think that these are ways that people are being desensitized to these kinds of things. But do I think that that causes it? Of course, to your point, many people go and see these movies and they're perfectly normal then in society.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I don't
when
know
you
what
look
the answer,
at violent crimes,
go ahead.
Just real quick, I mean, 95-99% of violent crimes are committed by boys and men, and that's men against men, too. And so when you have that in the mind of somebody who already has it in mind to do harm, then that's not helpful, and you don't want to arm these people either. So yeah. There are a lot of things that play a role, but the biggest is looking at that piece and what can we do to change how we portray men and boys on TV and what we teach in our schools and how we socially reinforce that every day in school and in our conversations and everything else.
I would argue. I hear what you're saying. This has to start in the home. Shouldn't depend on the movies to raise your children and to teach them how to be good citizens.
It has to be
in the home. It has to be in the schools. It has to be personal effects. It shouldn't be Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and some of the rest. I appreciate your calling us. Thank you. Tony, hi, you're on WGN.
Hi, Dean. I really enjoy your
program,
particularly on Sunday. My comment about this is that all too often the defense of the violent movies is that other causes exist, such as the culture, or as this previous caller said, gender identity. But there's a very clear maxim in law, particularly in Illinois, in cause and effect. An event need not be the only cause, providing it is a cause in conjunction with other causes that results in an action. And very clearly to me, having been the father of four boys, boys are more aggressive.
Yeah.
And cultures sometimes do not defend against bullying. And all of those items can come into play for violence on a more severe level. But anything that would support that violence, such as violent movies, has to be taken into consideration on a cause and effect. I'm not against movies of actions. I grew up with the John Wayne Westerns. There certainly was enough violence in it. I hope I have never caused violence like that to anybody. But taking people with an easier influence on what they do, the violence does generate violence, no matter how small the cause.
Yeah, I just don't know how it can't somewhat desensitize people. I mean, we've seen so many movies of, you know, these bloody, gruesome horror movies. We've seen so many movies with, you know, ironically, the very subject that is being talked about so much and debated now so much, the use of automatic weapons. These AK-47 style massacre movies. There have been tons of them like that. I don't know how that doesn't have somewhat of an effect. I'm not for movie censorship, and I don't think that if a movie like that is going to cause an action like that, I think either your DNA is that you are sick enough to go into a Walmart and shoot up men, women, children, and infants. I don't know that a movie would cause that, but I don't know how that and video games can't somewhat desensitize you into thinking, oh, it's not that big of a deal to pick up a gun and mow down people.
That seems to be
the go-to resolution if somebody has some political disagreement, a grudge against the world, a grudge against an ethnic group, a grudge against a gender. It's to, you know, get yourself an arsenal and go shoot up a store, a school, a playground.
But as a as an answer to that, the violence given reception by somebody who does not have a cultural standard that can lead to that. I don't care what the group is, as we see in the recent incidences of violence, it's mindless.
Yeah, and maybe that partially answers the question that I posed earlier of, you know, people all over the world are seeing these same movies. Why is it that the U.S. is so much more gun violent than other countries seeing these exact same movies? If your premise is these movies turn people into killers, why isn't that happening in other countries? I don't know the answer, but
it supports them.
Yeah. I appreciate your call, Tony. Thank you very much.
Dean, I love your show.
Thank you very much. Nice of you to call up. I appreciate it. 312-981-7200. We started talking about this movie, The Hunt, which Universal Pictures has decided not to release, this film that the president tweeted about, saying that this is a political movie that is pitting the elites against the poor people, in which elites hunt poor people for sport. And the president was making the example here that this movie is coming out, his quote from his tweet, the movie's coming out in order to inflame and cause chaos. You know, some people are tweeting and saying, how can a film about rich elites hunting poor people be a satire? That's what they're calling this movie. No one has seen this movie, by the way. Everybody is commenting on what this movie is, but nobody has seen it. But how can it be a satire? Perhaps for those like yourself who have viewed a great range of film than most moviegoers. Given the current political climate, this film would only add fuel to the polarization in our company. I understand your point, but in this run-up to an election, the studio made the right move. I promise you, the studio is not acting out of any sense of moral obligation. The studio is worried that they won't make as much money as possible. There is nothing that motivates them more than greenback dollars. Let's go to John on the phone at 312-981-7200. Hi, John. You're on WGN.
Morning, Dean. You know, I don't totally agree with you, but I don't totally disagree with you. And I'll say that the vast majority of the time, because I've listened to you for years.
Yeah.
And the thing that annoys me, I'm a range safety officer. I'm what you would probably label as a top-tier gun enthusiast.
Okay.
I'm in that small percentage of people that would be defined as having an arsenal.
Okay.
And I think the thing that annoys me, you know, last night I actually on one of the sub channels I was watching Cahill, U.S. Marshal, John Wayne movie, you know, from the glory days of Westerns,
right,
when, you know, right was right, wrong was wrong. The good guys wore white hats, the bad guys wore black hats, and the bad guys always died at the hand of a gun.
Right.
And you and I are old enough to remember Andy Taylor and the episode with Opie and the slingshot.
Yep.
And that was violence in our day. And I frankly, I do not go to very many movies anymore. And the very few movies I do generally tend to stay away from violence because I've felt for years that with the video games and with the movies that are out there, that they are desensitizing people. I mean, a lot of people do not realize that the U.S. military uses video games to desensitize troops for training now.
Mm-hmm.
because you're shooting an inanimate object, but it's somewhat real.
Yeah,
so it tends to desensitize them, whereas you and I shot at paper targets when we were kids.
Right, or, you know, we had a cap gun that's like, you know, bang, ow, and you held your chest, ooh, I'm dead, and you fall on the ground.
Oh exactly. And I can remember little plastic pellet guns.
Right.
And believe me, if one of us shot one of our friends with that pellet, that gun was put away until you learned.
Right, you could put your eye out with that thing.
Exactly. You
like
know,
the movie,
and,
yeah.
And when they talk about these movies being shown around the world and, well, these acts don't occur in other, you know, other countries, one of the problems that comes in, and I don't consider it so much a problem as just one of the issues that comes into play, is the fact that the United States has far more guns than any other country in the world, virtually.
Yeah. Well, I just think, you know, too, I agree with you that I don't know how some of these movies that are so ultra-violent now, ultra, ultra-bloody, ultra-gory, ultra-shocking, I don't know how that cannot have a desensitizing.
Well, and even television is effect. That way now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with you know, with the proliferation of online platforms for television, where there is no censorship anymore, you are seeing that in you know some of the shows now. But you know, that's also what attracts people to them. You know, they wanted to watch Sopranos because you'd see some bizarre, violent, bloody, unbelievable murder on it, in addition to a lot of things that people liked about those shows. So I don't really know. I don't know what the answer is. To simply blame Hollywood is wrong. It's not just that. This is a far more complex problem that, you know, includes... mental illness that includes, you might disagree with this since you're a gun enthusiast, that they're, you know, guns are getting into the hands of the wrong people. I don't know how to solve that. I don't know what the answer is to solve that
well,
problem.
But it's, and, but it's Gene, a, I'll it's tell a very, one, part very of complicated that solution problem. Is the fact that America needs to bring the gun owners to the table in these discussions and people need to have a dialogue.
Yeah, I agree. I 100% agree with you on that. I'm glad that you called up and shared your side of that. John, thank you very much for taking the time. What I want to do is open up the phone lines again, not to talk about guns. We're done with that. But I wanted to just talk about an article that was in the Tribune a couple of days ago. People ask us all the time where to eat when visiting Chicago. Here's what we tell them. Louisa Chu wrote the article, and it's got some interesting... I'm not sure that some of these places would have been my choice for if you're a tourist to Chicago, essentially what is a quintessentially Chicago place to go. She's listed a lot of coffee shops. She's listed, you know, some ice cream parlors, you know, things like that. I can think, you know, first, if you're coming to Chicago, you got to go to some classic pizza places, I think. You got to go to, I mean, for, you know, for my money, if you like deep dish pizza, you go to Lou Malnati's. I don't think it gets any better than that. If you like a thin crust pizza, Vito and Tony's on the south side is a classic. On the north side, where I live and where I order from, when I order thin crust pizza, I get it from D'Agostino's. I think they make a great thin crust pizza. So I think, you know, for the pizza... you know, quintessentially, you must visit while you're in Chicago. You got to go to those places. You got to have Chicago hot dogs. And, you know, in my opinion, you got to go to Portillo's. You got to go to Gene and Jude's. I think it's the best hot dog that we have in Chicago, Gene and Jude's. I love that. And, you know, everyone's got their favorites. You know, for restaurants, we've got a lot of fancy five-star restaurants, fancy, super expensive five-star restaurants. But for my money, you know, I always, I have talked about for years, Tufano's, T-U-F-A-N-O-S, on Vernon Place, right by the University of Illinois. I think that's one of the best restaurants in Chicago. These are my quintessential places. What are your quintessential places? That's what I want to know. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. 312-981-7200. Quintessentially, if you have somebody who is in town, you want to take them to some quintessentially Chicago places, where what would they be? Cheesecake Factory? Maybe. I don't know. 312-981-7200. This is Carrie on WGN. Good afternoon.
Hey, Dean, how are you doing?
Welcome.
Hey, a great place to go, and I know they didn't originate in Chicago, but there's only a few of them. It's not a chain. Is Lowry's on Ontario.
The prime beef? Prime
Lowry's prime the rib. Prime rib.
Yeah.
It's in that old Victorian mansion.
Right.
It's an awesome setting. You're right down, you know, just off Michigan Avenue in Streeterville. And if you have guests coming during the holidays, they deck the place out for Christmas. They have carolers that walk around and sing. It's and price wise compared to some of the other places that you were mentioning, perhaps it's a really good deal too.
Yeah.
I can't beat it for location and everything.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's a very quintessentially Chicago place for all the reasons that you mentioned, but it's a staple downtown. I don't know how long they've been open there. I'm going to guess. I seem to remember when I was a kid when we'd come downtown that Lowry's was there.
It was there when I was a kid. So, and I'm 52. So yeah. It's been there for a long time.
Yeah, I think you may be right about that. I haven't been for a long time, but you know what? I'm going to put that on my list. You know, time to go back. I love a good prime rib, and if I remember correctly, they do it pretty great there.
They've got the silver carts that they bring out. They slice it for you, and they've got the spinning salad bowl and the whole, it's something that would impress. Apart from the location and the venue, it would just the service and everything. It would be impressive to a guest.
Very much so. Yeah, you're right. It's right off of Michigan Avenue, the Magnificent Mile. There's lots to do there. That's a great choice. I'm going to send you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate if you'll hang on for a second, Carrie. Thank you for the call. This is Christine. You are on WGN. Hello. Excellent. From where are you calling?
From Warrens, Illinois.
Very nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. We have guests coming in. Whenever we have people coming in from out of state or out of town, we go to Kuma's. They originally are in Belmont. Then they have a restaurant in the West Loop. And then they just recently opened one in Schaumburg.
Yeah.
The best burgers.
I've never been to Kuma's, but I know about them. They're actually not far from my house. So
really?
Yeah, I've gone to go there, and there's always a line to get in. I know people like it. It's kind of a heavy metal vibe inside, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, they have the one on Belmont is really small. I think they can probably fit 10 or 12 people.
Yeah.
That's why there's not always a line. We just started going to the one in Schaumburg.
Okay.
It's a little bit bigger, still the heavy metal, but the burgers are amazing.
Yeah, they have all kinds of, I guess you might call them gourmet burgers, different combinations of things that people rave about it. And it very definitely is quintessentially Chicago, that's for sure.
And then they also have a burger of the month they do. Every month they change it. They do something different.
What's been your favorite burger that you've had there?
I like their traditional burger where it's just got, they have bacon on it, and then I think cheese, and then I get a fried egg on it.
Okay. All right. It's very quintessentially Chicago, that's for sure, as is Lou Malnati's. We're going to send you a gift certificate. Christine, I appreciate your call. Hi, Carol. You're on WGN.
Hi, Dean. To go along with that lady, they just opened a Kuma's Corners across from Vernon Hill Mall on Milwaukee Avenue.
Okay. Wow, that's great. Well, look at our WGN listeners going to the Kuma's with the heavy metal.
My suggestion was going to be the Mexican restaurant Ay Caramba in Park Ridge down the street from Pickwick.
Okay. All right. I've never been there, but I've heard about it.
You somebody broadcast from there once, I believe.
On WGN?
Yeah. I believe it. But a few years ago.
Okay.
And that.
But. I love the name. Ay Caramba.
Caramba, yeah.
In Park
the decorations
Ridge.
Are real nice. I mean, it looks like a little Mexican village in there and they have specials during the week. But Monday they're closed, and we're going to go there on Tuesday.
Somebody's good.
Coming in from out of town.
You know what? We've got a lot of great Mexican restaurants that are very quintessentially Chicago. I'm going to try that one. I'm going to get up that way and give that a try and see what all the talk is about. Hang on.
I told you once before about that Riverside restaurant.
Yeah.
They closed down.
Oh, did they?
Oh, forget going. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what?
I guess they've been in business for a while.
Restaurant business is tough. Yeah, to stay in business. Hang on for a second. I want to get you an American Weathermakers heating and cooling indoor weather station. We'll put that on the list for you. Some interesting texts coming in of some choices. Someone recommending the Greek Islands restaurant that sponsors our Food Time segment today. Took a friend there from New York, said that they have Greek restaurants there, but nothing like the Greek Islands. I agree. It's very good. It's my favorite Greek town restaurant. Speaking of Greek restaurants, I love Psistaria that I've talked about. P-S-I-S-T-A-R-I-A, pronounced Psistaria. It's on Tui, just east of the Edens Expressway. I love that one as well. Here's someone going to the Park Grill in Millennium Park. They love that. The Berghoff, very quintessentially Chicago. Weber Grill. Carmine's on Rush Street, also very quintessentially Chicago. Home Run Inn, Club Lago on Superior. Those are all good choices. Oh, Donato's Restaurant, someone's suggesting. I love Donato's on Wall Street. Great Italian food, great pizza. I've talked about them with the greatest lasagna in the history of lasagna there. I love that place as well. Yeah, some good choices here. Uno's. Yeah, you know, some people like Uno's. If you're going deep dish pizza, I think Lou Malnati's is the better choice. But some good suggestions here. And we'll see you tomorrow morning right after the 8 o'clock news on Steve Cochran's show every Monday through Friday. More on entertainment. We have fun talking about entertainment and just have tons of laughs every weekday morning with Steve. And then, of course, on the WGN TV morning news, I'll tomorrow be talking with Oscar winner Cate Blanchett and also Sherry Shepherd, who you know from The View and stand-up comedy and so many other things, will be joining us all tomorrow morning. And we'll see you again next Sunday morning here on 720 WGN Chicago.